This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Carmelia, T. Shaoik and Kelly Anissa. It's World Population Day today. We wrapped up that story with Shaoik's comment that 1.8 billion youths are entering their reproductive years. Now, mm-hmm. We're going to explore that a little bit further on this story, this next story. And just to check this number quickly, the UN Nations for Statistical Purposes define youth as those persons between the ages of 15 and 24.
All right.
And we did get quite a bit of comments from the previous story.
Yes. So Kelun Tan wrote in and said, I heard that the forecast growth of human population is going to slow down as more and more percentage of the population is going into middle class and starting to have less kids. And Cash wrote in and said, this is funny. There are concerns about increasing population and then another group having concerns about an aging population. For example, not enough young people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point because as on top of the world being overpopulated, if we also have an aging population where there are more older people outnumbering young people because people are living longer now, right? Yeah. Due to better medical advances, are we able to support a growing population of older people with their medical needs and healthcare needs as well?
I mean, it's not something that we're going to solve this hour at all.
But I can promise not to have any more children.
And so anyway, we're moving on to the next topic of the hour, something quite related, sex education. But first, a quick check on our Twitter poll, Kelly.
So we asked you, what should sex education teach kids? 92% of you said sexuality and relationships, followed by 5% who said procreation only and 3% who said abstinence only. So you can join that Twitter poll by tweeting us or taking that poll at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
So interesting, 3% only taking this poll who said sex education should be teaching abstinence, which is contrary to the view in a letter to the editor and a Star earlier this week. So that letter called comprehensive sexuality education amoral, and instead that sexual education should be based or rather oriented to the values and virtues of married love. Mm. So this was a letter sent by an associate professor, Dr. Rafida Hanim Mokhtar. She signed off as president of the International Women's Alliance for Family, Institution and Quality Education. Their acronym is WAFIC. And so she was actually responding to an initial letter by Dr. Kamal Kenny, vice chairman of the Federation of Reproductive Health Associations Malaysia, who had originally write in to make the point that comprehensive sexuality education, or CSE, still has a long way to go in terms of protecting children from sexual violence. Mm. So Dr. Rafida's letter, she wrote that WAFIC completely disagrees with using the CSE syllabus as promoted by the International Planned Parenthood Foundation, IPPF. She categorically stated that the rights-based approach of CSE will not be successful. And in fact, she said that CSE is not rights-based so much as desire-based. Mm. I think what she meant, or rather trying to imply there, is that comprehensive sexuality education promotes desire, sexual desire.
Specifically.
So she also had many other criticisms about comprehensive sexuality education. For example, it teaches sex education about without a moral framework, and it undermines young people's ability to comprehend the profound implications of sexual behavior, and also that it reduces sex to a biological instinct, and that this deprives young people of the capacity to distinguish between genuine love and sexual exploitation.
So to understand comprehensive sexuality education, just from the perspective of those who did develop it, and since the letter writer did referred specifically to the module from the International Planned Parenthood Foundation, IPPF, so I spoke to the former regional director of IPPF, Dato' Dr. Raj Karim. She used to be the chairperson of the National Population and Family Development Board in Malaysia as well. She was regional director of the IPPF for 10 years, and now she holds the role of co-convener of the National Technical Working Group on Comprehensive Sexuality Education. So a good person to help us understand what CSE is. So here she is explaining that.
The term comprehensive sex education has already been peeled, because when it first started, sex education was sort of very raw. It was related to the basic facts of sex education, and also later on it became more of how you're going to prevent HIV and STIs, etc. Mm-hmm. But over the years, international organizations, NGOs have realized that sex education is just not physical, but it is now an overall comprehensive terminology that we use to provide children with the correct knowledge, attitude, skills, and values for them to make appropriate and healthy choices and lead a healthy life. But it also talks about gender relations and gender sensitivity. It talks about values, about respect. This cuts across races, religion, where you are and where you're coming from. Because to put it in simple terms, every child grows up and faces the same kind of body changes, feelings, emotions. We are really teaching children about growing up, healthy growing up. And we also need to talk about the emotions. Every child will have sexual feelings, whether you like it or not, at the stage that they're growing up. It's because of the hormone changes. So every person, as we say, is a sexual human being, whether you like it or not. So what comprehensive sex education tries to do is to teach children to understand what growing up means, what you need to do, how you need to take care of yourself, yeah? And also, how do you develop healthy relationships with your friends, with your peers, with your colleagues, with your classmates, and also with members of the family.
But the letter from WAFIC is against all of that. What WAFIC advocates for is sexual abstinence or avoidance programs and empowering young people with the knowledge to make abstinence successful. What is this knowledge? For WAFIC, it means avoiding vulgarity entering through the eyes and ears, gender segregation, including in schools, and resisting the normalization of sexual mores brought by CSE-influenced sources. Sex education must be imbued with a sense of responsibility in managing sexual desire as guided by our values, whatever our values are.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, it's clear that they are talking about values based around abstinence, that sex should only occur within the context of marriage. And this argument between, you know, a more comprehensive model of teaching sex and sexuality, as opposed to one that only teaches abstinence, this is an age-old debate, isn't it? Yeah. So again, I went back to Dato' Raj. I asked her, would we actually be better off teaching abstinence?
You know, when we talk about sex education, yes, you can talk whether the concept of marriage, yes, that is ideal. But we're not living in an ideal world. We have to face reality and we have to face sex. There are numerous studies done in this country alone and not and all over the world, but just in this country alone, that shows you that children are initiating sex at the age of 10, 11, 12 to 14 years of age. So how do you want to talk only about sex education in the context of marriage? You need to prevent children from getting into harm and into danger. So this is why I know there's a lot of criticism against sex education in the sense that it should only be an abstinence model. But it doesn't work. Studies all over the world and also in Malaysia has shown that it doesn't work. You have to inform children and you have to tell them about the dangers that they need to know and how they have to protect themselves. As I said, we need to face reality.
So, you know, if we go back to this argument of moral values, yes, we've been talking about this for a long time, and it's not just in Malaysia. The role of morality in sex education, I did some research. Obviously, it's hard to find literature that looks at an Asian context or Malaysian context, but a very good one I actually took a look at a health education journal in the UK, and by looking at the studies that were published from the early 20th century right up to currently, they were able to use that as a marker of how the conversation about sex education has changed. So I think if we start by looking at the Western experience after World War II, just to gauge the trends over modern history. In about the 1940s, sexually transmitted diseases was still seen as an issue of morality rather than health. Mm. So in the 40s and 50s, sex education was linked to marriage, procreation, and family health.
And the 60s and 70s saw conflicting responses to sexual liberation. There were more intense debates between conservative and liberal attitudes towards sex education. After that, the 80s reflected sex education that was more focused on managing the consequences of young people's sexual activity. For example, sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted teenage pregnancy. And this brings us to the 2000s, where we are now. Mm. The priorities of sex education in this period are focused more on facilitating young people as agents who determine their own sexual health, rather than enforcing any one particular form of normal sexuality or portraying sex purely in terms of risk.
Yeah, so Malaysia has faced the same trajectory in terms of the debates and perspectives on sex education, although we started a little later. So here's Datuk Raj explaining the Malaysian experience.
We have tried to introduce sex education right from the 1980s when we started with so-called population education. Mm-hmm. And then we went on to sex education. We went on to family life education. Now we call it reproductive and social education. We call it faculty program. There are so many programs going on, you know. Say, for example, Ministry of Education has implemented so-called sex education in schools. They have a good curriculum, but the way that the knowledge is imparted and the way that the curriculum is being done, you know, because it is not a separate curriculum, but it is integrated into various subjects, moral education, physical education. But still, there are drawbacks and there are bottlenecks and there are constraints, because even the Ministry of Education, by teaching teachers through teacher training, teachers still, not all, but some teachers, and many of them, are still not confident, and some of them are shy to be able to teach the hard facts of sex education.
And has it worked? Has sex education, in all its various iterations and different names and different types of programs, has it been effective for children and young people in Malaysia? Here's Datuk Raj again.
After all these years, nobody has really evaluated the effectiveness of sex education in Malaysia, whether it is done through Ministry of Education or through the NGOs. So we have a technical working group going on now, which has called in the government agencies, it has experts, it has professionals, we have NGOs to sit together to see what we can do as a whole. We also have JAKIM with us, and JAKIM has been very positive, because the role of JAKIM now, they're going to look at it and put it in the context of Islam or whatever other religion. You know, the other religions, we have not brought in the interfaith group, but that's the next step. So we have six subgroups working now, looking at different aspects of the target groups that we want to reach, because it is not only school children that we're concerned with, but before they go to school. So we have a group re-looking at the education that needs to be provided to preschool children, for school children. We have one for out-of-school children and youth. We have a group looking into the marginalized, the disabled, the street children, those at increased vulnerability, HIV/AIDS. And we have one group that will look specifically into implementation, monitoring, and evaluation. And we hope that we are aiming to come up with a reference module based on the international technical guidance that is now being promoted by UNESCO. So we're going to look at this model and see how we can adapt it for Malaysia and for the different target groups that we are looking at, so that we can give children and parents and communities the correct information, update information, and the way that the information can be imparted.
you know, I know Dato' Raj said there has been no evaluation, no formal evaluation of the effectiveness of sex education. But if we want to look at what's happening in society as a gauge in terms of teenage pregnancies, back in 2015, this was, I think, the most shocking statistic that I could find that sort of captures it. Then Health Minister Dato' Sri Dr. S. Subramaniam was quoted in the media as saying that on average, 1,500 teenage girls get pregnant each month. That boils down to an average about 50 cases a day.
My goodness.
Yeah, and we don't need... Okay, yes, we do need proper evaluation of how sex education is being done in Malaysia. But on the other hand, we also don't need that to tell us that something is wrong in the way young people and children are learning about their bodies, are learning about relationships. And if we still have people like Wafiq writing about how sex should only occur when it's guided by genuine love or moral...
Married love.
Yeah. That's another conversation, isn't it?
Bit of an oxymoron.
And we just talked about compatibility in marriage, right? Yeah, on our show this week as well. But what do you think? Do moral values, does that conversation about love have a place in teaching young people about sexual health and sexual and reproductive health and sexuality?
There is a place for it, but it shouldn't be the main message. I suppose issues related to intimacy and trust and you know, sexuality, a shared experience like that, which is very private and very intimate, you want to have conversations about love and you know, kindness and, you know, trust. But, I mean, the argument, the thing... There are a lot of things that I have an issue with with this letter, but one of the biggest issues I have is this argument that with a comprehensive sex education, you would have children getting involved in sexual activities at a much younger age. And I'm fairly certain there's several reports, maybe not in Malaysia, but in the Western Hemisphere, where they showed that children who were given comprehensive sex education actually delayed their first sexual experiences because they are much more aware of the risks. They're much more confident in their body, in expressing their sexuality, and then they know what's healthy or not healthy, what they're ready for and what they're not ready for.
Yeah, the Netherlands is a good case study of that, and many, many international studies, including from UNESCO and UNFPA, quote Netherlands as because they have a national sexual sex education in schools. They start at the age of preschool, actually, and it's not about teaching sex; it's about teaching children about their bodies, like you said, being comfortable and knowing what's right and what's wrong, or what's safe and not safe, and they have shown that they can delay age of first sex up to 17 and an improvement from what it was before.
And it is comprehensive sex education. So it is also age appropriate. I think a lot of critics, people who are against CSE, probably have not even have a look at at least the structure of a CSE program. Because if you look at it, it is really not as, you know, outrageous as they seem to make it out to be.
I don't know. Do they imagine there are diagrams and
videos showing with sounds?
And also, isn't it a little bit unrealistic when you think about how directing sex education, I guess outlining it in a way that where it should only fall under the context of marriage, you know, I mean, at that age, I think that a lot of people, I mean, some people may, I suppose, take that into consideration, but what about the rest who choose to go out and, I mean, who choose to have sex anyway? That sort of education does not prepare them or does not give them the kind of information they need.
And it's harmful.
Yes, exactly.
It's judgmental.
Yeah.
It turns the young people away from avenues where they could be reaching out for information on how to have safe sex because they fear that they would be judged.
Yeah. Yes, yes, exactly. You are creating that culture of shame as well if, you know, someone were to have premarital sex. Yeah.
And Tina, you're right. It's very possible that the opponents of CSE, of comprehensive sexuality education, don't understand that it is based on values. But it's not values of the, you know, overarching morality that we think of. It's values like respect, inclusion, non-discrimination, empathy, equality, responsibility. Are these values not inherent regardless of any culture that we are in?
Absolutely. And I think that's pretty much all encompassing, at least enough sufficiently to kind of then... You can add on your own personal values and your own personal, I suppose, mores. Or your,
And it's about giving you the skills so that you know if you're entering, when you're entering into sexual activity or a relationship, where you stand within that, right? And so not to be influenced or exploited and take risky actions without understanding the consequences.
And we have a Twitter poll when we asked you what should sex education teach kids. So 93% of you have said sexuality and relationships, followed by 4% who said procreation only, and 3% of you said abstinence only. We also have some comments. Melissa said, can't prevent them from having sex, but we can educate them to prevent diseases and unwanted babies. And on WhatsApp, someone wrote in and said, I feel that a lot of values that can be taught in sex education to the parents should be taught to the parents more so than the teachers. As in, how can parents inform them why sex education is important? There are parents who are not willing to expose children to sex education, and that's also partly quite a setback. Intimacy and form of trust should be included in talks and conversations about sex, and intimacy does not have to be in the context of marriage.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think a lot of parents, i.e. people our age, shall we, we didn't get sex education, and we think we're fine.
Or we got that very biological form of sex education, which is
insufficient.
Which is where the parts are in your body and how it works, which... countries like the Netherlands are teaching 4-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
And then when we get to the teenage years, there's nothing else about the realities of what adolescents face when they are going through hormonal changes and exploring relationships, not necessarily sexual, but your romantic relationships as well, right? How do you navigate those emotions?
Yeah, the emotional roller coaster. You've been there.
And I do think first and foremost, we need to address that concern by certain parents, I suppose, that sex education encourages kids to have sex. And I think once we get rid of that, that perception, I think it makes it a little easier to encourage teachers and to include sex education in our education system. Any
more comments?
That was it.
All right, so I think I guess that's all we have this hour, but you can keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also look us up on Facebook, BFM The Bigger Picture. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast, bfm.my/dailydigest. That's our website. You can also download our BFM app or look us up on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. is Front Row with Sharmila Gunnison. We're signing off with What's Love Got to Do With It by Tina Turner. This has been The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.